Hi, Maria. This is Fry Roderick here for AirMaria.com, and we're in Washington, D.C. at the American Life League Conference. And we have here a very special guest, Dr. Mildred Jefferson. How are you doing, Dr. Mildred?
Fine and new. It's good to, delighted to be here.
Good. Yeah, it's very good to be here. So you're a very interesting guest here. Are you a speaker here as well?
No, I'm not speaking for this conference, but I am on the board of directors of American Life League.
Great. That's a very big organization, a very important one, but it's been around a while, but not quite around as long as you've been involved in the pro-life movement. How long have you been involved in the movement?
Since before the beginning.
Before the beginning, which was 1972, right? That's the beginning.
Well, legally, we came into being as a national movement in June of 1973, but we had to start efforts in action in Massachusetts in 1970.
Which was before the beginning, right?
That's right. And that was before Roe versus Wade, because the national effort to promote abortion had already been long ago advanced when Margaret Sanger started her birth control movement. And gradually it developed. But when Hugh Moore, the founder of the Dixie Cup Company, joined in the effort and added the hyphenated world population to the birth control movement's name, it brought a foundation of high-powered propagandizing techniques plus corporate big business money. And someone who may have been just a blip in social history became a name, which is now part of the most destructive thing in the world, because the organization that is the modern-day representation of her long-ago birth control movement is the organization with the double P's and on the, or among the departments of ALL is STOPP.
Okay.
Headed by, yes, the, I always say Professor Sedlock, and he chastises me because he says he isn't, but I have given him that title because Jim Sedlock is perhaps the most knowledgeable person in the country on that organization.
Okay, so it's Stop PP is Stop
really
Planned Parenthood.
STOPP, I thought that was extremely clever.
Let's get back to the early days of the pro-life movement. And you're based in Boston, right?
Boston, and the Massachusetts was selected by the population controllers
Planned Parenthood
to be a target state.
Really?
Because we have lots of universities and colleges in Massachusetts. You're often the leading edge for political and social change. And at that time, Massachusetts had a Catholic population of over 50% of its total population. Though the reasoning of the population controllers was if they could get a state like Massachusetts, which is a commonwealth, to tumble into the pro-abortion column, then the others would fall like dominoes. So I'm a medical doctor, a general surgeon, and in Massachusetts, the wedge for motivating the start of a right-to-life movement was from doctors. There was a famous Dr. Lynch, an OBGYN, who long before much of the rest of the country recognized what the population control movement was doing, had fixed firmly on the things that were undermining the safe and serious practice of medicine. Then he joined with Dr. Joseph Stanton, who, combining the dynamic internist with the OBGYN, plans were made for starting our first pro-life organization, and that eventually evolved into the Value of Life Committee, which became actually our first. And the motivation for jump-starting that into action was a resolution introduced in 1970 to the American Medical Association. Didn't condone abortion, just sort of bent its founding position against it.
That's the way it works, right?
Yeah, so that a doctor doing abortion under his state's laws would not then be subject to malpractice action because the act itself was still against the law.
And where do you fit in all this? Are you, I heard you are the found the new movement from this called the Massachusetts Right for Life.
The whole movement, the Right to Life movement, but since we in Massachusetts had already organized, we were in better position to come together to help with the national organizing that led to the development of National Right to Life Committee.
Okay.
So that we had already got our charter of state incorporation about 10 days to 2 weeks before Doe and Roe were handed down in 73.
Just in time.
So in June of 73, when it became necessary to launch National Right to Life Committee, we had the ground experience to be able to participate, and I had the honor of giving the keynote address that launched National Right to Life Committee.
Wow. So you're one of the founders, then, of the National Right to Life Committee.
And served three terms as president from 1975 through 78.
Of the national.
In fact, it was during those 3 years that it became a national organization.
I was going to say, that's very early on, right?
Yeah, because our first two presidents could not get reelected, so they didn't have the time to do the organizational work we needed. So, but in that 3 years, we were able to go from lists of a few activists on paper with a lot of other telephones to active state organizations in all 50 states and some of its territories.
Wow. Now, Boston has been known in the news recently, too, because of the recent win of Scott Brown, right?
The Senator-elect Scott Brown.
Were you involved in this at all?
I'm involved in everything that happens in our state to some degree, because when I became president of National Right to Life Committee, and it was I who started our political effort as a national organization, in my inaugural speech, I called attention to the fact that my objective was to help bring about a new politics, which would be a restatement of the very best of the old, bringing the government of the people back to the people. And the election of Scott Brown, U.S. Senator from Massachusetts, the first Republican to be elected since 1972, and replacing someone who had been in office 46 years and led some people to become misled into thinking that one family, one party, one person could own an elected representative seat, and that was not the case. I'm happy that people honored his memory and the fact that because he was the son of a multimillionaire who became a self-made multimillionaire because this free market system of our Democratic Republic allowed him to and enabled his son, unfortunately, to pursue the socialist dream, because no one must forget that this dream that the Democrats, or left-wing Democrats, kept talking about as they had to preserve Senator Kennedy's dream was a socialist dream. And that is a backward step for 20th century United States of America.
This is also strange, because another man talked about a dream, and that was Martin Luther King.
Yes.
And he talked about the race issue, and you are a doctor who is a woman and a black person. So when were you a doctor, and was that early on as far as women?
I never intended to do anything else. I happened to decide as a child, after following a very wise family doctor around — this was a rural practice.
Okay.
I was impressed, because whenever the doctor came, people got well. It was only when I was older I recognized they didn't call the doctor unless they expected the person to recover.
Okay.
If he wasn't going to recover, why have the doctor make two trips? They would wait until the dying was finished and then go get the doctor. But anyway, when I followed him around asking questions, he was very generous and answered. And then one day I said, I think I would like to be a doctor when I grow up. He said, well, now if you want to do that, you just go right ahead. My family did not have money, but it had land.
Okay.
And the children don't usually notice whether they have money or not.
Okay.
Right. The great concern in my family was making sure that I was educated properly.
Right.
So that I had the books, I had access to things that other children didn't. Because although I was living in the piney woods of East Texas, my life was in a world beyond the boundaries of the woodland.
But you're bringing us back to the encouragement of the least among us, which is the unborn and the elderly, and it's wonderful that you're.
People only have to listen to speeches, and they can march, and they can do demonstrations. Even U.S. Supreme Court justices don't have to see the impact or consequences of their decisions. But then, without consulting us, they want us to carry out these socially destructive missions. And I say no, and I am not willing to give up the role of doctor as healer to become the new social executioner.
Wow. Well, thank you very much, Mildred Jefferson.
Thank you so much, Father. It's nice of you to invite me, and I look forward to seeing you the next time our paths cross.
Well, very good. Turn into airmaria.com and see the interview. Thank you very much, Mildred.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, Ave Maria.